Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of the AccuWeather Podcast. Hit it, Andy. Yes.
We're going. Hollywood. We're going back to Tinseltown.
We are. We're going Hollywood.
Yeah.
Ken Prowl, we convinced him to sit in with us on this intro.
Convinced
hi, Ken. Say something.
Convinced me. I've been waiting 16 episodes to be invited onto the AccuWeather Podcast.
He's always just been kind of lurking in the background.
That's
so
me.
So we said, give him a mic.
I desperately wanted to be a part of this show.
The guy is not going away. Somebody give him a mic.
So, we're playing Hollywood. So, of course, it's another installment of Weather in the Movies.
It's episode 2. And this time we are going to be talking about Sharknado.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I don't know how you guys roped me into this one.
Annual Oscar winner.
Yeah.
And there's a new episode coming out. So that's why we want to kind of talk about Sharknado.
I still can't believe they actually have made 6 of these films. Six!
Six.
How?
Unbelievable that they made
good
one.
Good for Ian Ziering and Tara Reid.
Oh,
right?
Tara Reid, yeah.
Yeah. That they actually have some work.
Oh, there's actors that we know in it. Okay.
They were once respectable at one time.
So anyway, we have Sharknado that we're going to be talking about, and we also are going to be talking about The Perfect Storm. Now, we have some meteorologists that are sitting down with us. Once again, we have meteorologist Jesse Farrell, Becky DePodwin, and this time we've invited in meteorologist Dave Dombeck, who just happened to be here when the perfect storm hit back in 1991.
Yep, and he's going to share some of his experiences from working here at AccuWeather while that was happening. And so we'll do something a little serious, and we'll also get to the ridiculous side of how weather can factor into some movies, whether some of our favorites or not some of our favorites.
Dave already told me he's not sticking around for the Sharknado part of this, this podcast.
Yeah, he's only in for the perfect storm part, so the respectable part. Then it all just digresses from there, so stay tuned.
From our global headquarters in State College, Pennsylvania, it's the AccuWeather Podcast. Here's your host, Regina Miller.
Well, I'm joined in the studio now by Jesse, Becky, and Dave, and we are talking about the movie The Perfect Storm. This will be the first movie that we're talking about. So thank you all for sitting down with me today. Well, let me just quickly give a synopsis of that. So The Perfect Storm is based on the true story about the Andrea Gale, which is a commercial fishing boat that set sail from Gloucester, Massachusetts in the end of October 1991, and then the boat got caught in what was later dubbed The Perfect Storm and then never returned again. So it stars a couple of my favorites, George Clooney. We talked about this, Becky. George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg. I mean, there is a movie in and of itself.
Yep.
Just having the two of them on it. But I also have a clip of this because we want to talk about the actual storm itself.
Weather's been spitting faxes every hour. They're running out of scary words.
It's being called the worst storm in recorded history.
Hurricane Grace is accelerating off of Sable Island.
Once it starts, no force on Earth can stop it.
These storms have collided.
Please,
God, get them there.
Call it the perfect storm.
I wanted to bring you, Dave, especially in on this because you were here when the perfect storm occurred at AccuWeather, right?
That is correct, yes. That was quite the unique situation. It was actually a time of the year where things were pretty quiet. Normally, you know, if you don't have hurricanes or tropical storms going on at that time of the year, it's kind of a quiet time. You're
right.
Before the winter, the big winter storms. You're after the big, you know, the thunderstorm season in the summer. And typically the middle of fall is a quiet time. And it certainly was that way in other parts of the country, in the Midwest and central Pennsylvania was pretty quiet. But we had this situation where it really was the perfect, it was a good
name.
That
was a good name for it, right?
It was a good name because it's not too often, it's very rarely that you would see three things kind of coming all into play at the same time. Obviously, it had Hurricane Grace, which is not unusual to have a hurricane out in the ocean somewhere in late October near right. Bermuda. So that's not an unusual thing. But just the upper air pattern, the way it's set up, was there was a strong upper-level trough, a big dip in the jet stream coming down into the northeast toward New England. There was a strong cold front, and everything just kind of came into play. One fed off of the other, and literally everything did combine and merge and phase together into this monster storm. I mean, Hurricane Grace alone was a, you know, it was a substantial storm. But when you combine that other energy with the other factors in there, that's what made it such a powerful storm.
So it kind of blew up at that point. Just the storm just magnified in intensity like crazy once it
exactly it blew up. But here's the thing. You could have had that happen, and it could have been hundreds of miles or 1,000 miles out in the ocean, and as meteorologists, we call them fish storms. I mean, they just, right. they affect the shipping lanes. They're out over the fishes in the ocean, and it really wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But the way the upper air pattern set up, the upper flow caught that storm, and then it actually swirled it around, and it made some loops offshore, and it actually came back toward the coast, close enough to the coast that it was a major impact, especially for New England.
Right.
Somewhat down to New York City and the Mid-Atlantic coast, but was more so in New England. But instead of it being able to escape out to sea and move away, it actually got captured, and then it rotated around some and came back closer to the coast. And as it did that, it just kind of sat there and spun and spun. And so it was the duration of the storm.
Right.
It's one thing to get
problem. Yeah,
powerful
right.
winds and lashing surf and everything at the coast for a 12-hour period to deal with it. It's over. It's gone. But that was days. That was like 3 days. It was just pounding the coast for that amount of time. And that's what made it as bad as it did. It just kept piling the water
right.
up against the coast of New England.
Well, what are your thoughts, guys, on how the movie did in depicting this? Becky?
A lot of it was actually fairly accurate, but maybe just a bit Hollywoodized, whatever.
I like that. Hollywoodized. That works.
I have a couple of quotes. You know, the storms have collided. They're exploding. That's actually fairly accurate. It is called explosive cyclogenesis when storms rapidly strengthen and the low pressure drops significantly. So in that context, the storm kind of did grow rapidly and strengthen rapidly. And then you're sailing into a bomb. Also a bit dramatized, but not entirely inaccurate with the way the winds were and the waves. Like, it was very violent, very chaotic. It's a strong term, but I can't imagine being out there in those seas.
It was a crazy storm for, like you said, Dave, because normally it would be the fishes are being
right.
affected unless
right.
you're somebody going after the fishes,
exactly.
which is exactly yeah. what they were doing.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah. Yep. So what did you think about it, Jesse?
As Becky mentioned, the words that were used to describe it are not out of the realm of what meteorologists might say about it. For example, bomb storm is a term that we throw around. It does have a very specific drop in pressure required to classify as bomb storm, but perfect storm probably did that.
I've looked back at some charts. So was it mm-hmm. kind of like an upper air pattern that kind of negatively tilted and just kind of pulled it back in? Was it a little bit like Sandy? Would it be like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Sandy is the storm that I hear it compared to most frequently, I think, because it was a combination of two storms and kind of made meteorologists have a little bit of deja vu back to the perfect storm. Sandy was really its own thing and was different in many ways, but because it was a combination of two storms, it did kind of harken back to the perfect storm in 91.
And with the perfect storm, you didn't have as much rain, was not as big of a factor where it was with Sandy.
Yeah, and it never made
and flooding.
It
yes.
didn't get so, close enough. Yeah,
yeah.
Sandy
but too. The coastal flooding, it was the winds and the tides running way, way above normal with the water just being forced against the coast. That was it was the coastal flooding and the winds
right.
were the biggest thing with the perfect storm.
And as far as the wave at the end that did them in, there were reports from a buoy of 100-foot waves with the perfect storm.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't find out for sure if that was ever accepted into the official record books, but it was at least measured by a buoy. And you certainly would think that the buoy probably didn't catch the biggest wave, so there could have been even bigger
yeah,
waves.
Yeah, because what are the chances
right.
that buoy
They're
out
very,
in the ocean caught the biggest wave?
Right.
So that was probably
right.
like the median wave that
well,
was
I think,
out there at the time.
They talk about significant wave heights. And the significant wave heights for the perfect storm were probably around 30 meters, and usually the highest waves are three times the significant wave height, I believe.
Now, we were talking earlier about this, Becky, before we actually started recording, where you were talking about there were glimpses where you thought it was so sad, wasn't it? Like, at the end, I was crying, but like the glimpses where they thought they were going to get out, especially because you know it was like a true story. So you're wow, like, sure. How sad, but where they thought they might get out.
Yeah, well, Jesse and I were saying there's the scene where the sun shines for just a brief moment and they feel like they have hope. We speculate that might have been when they were going through the eye of the storm itself, but I'm not totally sure that's true because the maps that they show, which I think were actually pretty accurate maps, the weather charts mm-hmm. they would print out on their boats, kind of shows them kind of threading this needle in between the two pressure systems. So there's a little bit of discrepancy there. Because I think the eye makes sense for it to be sunny briefly and then have the hardest impacts hit, which mm-hmm. is what happened.
I tend to agree with you, Becky, in that even if that wasn't accurately what was happening based on the charts, I think they wanted you to have that belief that they were in the eye. Because I think right after that, like George Clooney says something about, she's not going to let us out. So, yeah. You know, he's looking and seeing, oh, wait. This is we're in the middle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I kind of get the impression that even if that wasn't accurately what would have been happening, that's kind of what they meant to happen.
As far as people being, killed at sea by big storms, that happens a lot, or happened a lot in the past when people didn't have access to accurate weather forecasts. The Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, that's the storm that was
coming.
Is another famous shipwreck.
Oh, because that was Lake Superior, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was on the Great Lakes.
The Gordon Wright song.
That is a good song, yeah. Another sad scenario.
Sad scenario, yeah. I mean, if they would have made, another 15 miles or so, they probably would not have, that boat would not have sunk. So that's another, it's like a sad story. They almost got there and they didn't. It's like you knew that it was going to happen,
Right.
That was 1975, and of course this is 91. It was mm-hmm. many years later, but it was still that like sad situation. It's like you knew, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Almost got there and just didn't quite happen.
Right. What was it like to be here? Because you were watching the storm evolving.
And it was one of those things where we knew the potential was there, but it's literally, it's like we were like reacting on the fly. Because this mm-hmm. was now, remember, and Jesse would know, this is even before he was going to school.
I think I had just started my freshman year of college in 91.
Yeah.
So.
And so the number of models, the number of the guidance that we had, there were computer models and we had, but it was definitely, compared to what we have today.
The number of models was two, as I recall.
It was two. And you had satellite, you had good support,
yep.
but still,
yep.
it was one of those things where, trying to forecast what actually happened, even like two, 3 days ahead, we didn't quite catch it. It was like we were always playing a catch-up game, trying to really portray what actually is happening here with the weather. And so it was like reacting to the data that we're seeing as it's unfolding in front of our eyes. That really was, it was not like, oh yeah, we hit this storm,
right.
10, no way.
Right.
We didn't hit it 4 days out. We didn't hit it 3 days. The magnitude of it, we knew the potential was there for a pretty major storm and a major event, but not to the magnitude that it happened.
Which you could see why the fishing boat would be, because they're already out at a certain area.
Sure.
It's not
sure.
like we can turn around and be out of this area in 24 hours.
Right.
We are wherever we are for
way out. They mentioned the Flemish Cap, and I'm like, where is this? So I Googled it.
It's
several hundred miles off the coast of Nova Scotia. Like, it is really, really far out.
Way out there,
right.
Even if they had heard about, when they did, they heard about the storm, but they didn't even have a chance to make it back. They wouldn't have. They would have had to have sailed through it, or it would have hit them at some point.
Right.
And probably not one of those storms where we would say, oh, yeah, we're going to put a feather in our cap. It is a big victory. Yeah, we did a great job with it as it was unfolding and getting the message out. But as far as, like, from a forecasting standpoint, from a long range, mm-hmm. like, out distance, I don't think any of the meteorologists really hit this, the magnitude of it.
It was a lot harder to forecast that type of thing back then, and even harder to communicate it. I mean, these mm-hmm. days, if you're on a boat, you probably have satellite internet, and you can get the information immediately. But even if the forecast would have been perfect, there would have been no way to get that information to these guys
in
on the boat.
In the time frame that they needed. So your vote on this is accuracy of the actual storm was pretty good and how they described it.
Yeah, now, certainly compared to some other movies out there.
Yeah, well, we're talking about Sharknado coming up, so if you really want to know about accuracy in movies, you want to listen to that part of it. But so the things I think that we don't know were really that storyline that they had, because we don't know.
Right, you don't know what you don't know.
Why they turned around, like in the movie, you know, where somebody was dragged off with a rope, like, and where their ice maker broke, and they had, like, so we don't know. We can only speculate what they were going through out there.
Right.
So that's the fictional part of the movie.
Right.
But it makes it a great movie.
But I do think that they talked to some of the people who were there on land to help make the plot fairly reasonable. Mm-hmm. Although they also got sued by some of the folks in the movie because they used their real names.
Oh. Mm. Oh, I didn't know
Side
that
note.
Part of it.
I could tell you from my reaction seeing the movie for the first time, my wife and I saw it in the movie theater. And watching that, I mean, I was almost getting, like, chills.
It was a good place to watch it in the theater.
Knowing that, I mean, I lived through that. I mean,
yes,
as a meteorologist,
right.
And I know that, and like Becky said, it was pretty accurate, you know. I mean, it was a movie, it was Hollywood, but still, I think overall they did a pretty good job, and it was like almost like I was getting chills, knowing that, you know, I lived through that. I mean, I know it. I mean,
I
was a forecaster
of
when
the
that
perfect
was,
storm.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, so that was a really...
pretty
really
amazing.
Neat feeling, yeah.
I thought it was neat, too, how they showed the hurricane hunters flying through. It was a brief scene, but they did show the hurricane hunters, and then they called out the winds, 140 knots, 140 miles per hour, I'm not sure. And they also showed the local Boston meteorologist looking at the satellites, seeing all the ingredients come together, and I'd have to imagine that's what you guys were looking at. You were seeing all of these things slowly piecing together, and so I really liked that aspect of showing what the forecasters were looking at, and then
and their
that
reactions,
information.
Reactions were well done.
There were a couple of colorful words said on the forecasting floor,
I am sure, which
we will not say right now.
Yeah, I am sure there were. Well, one thing I was really impressed that when I came away from the movie, one of the things I was really impressed with was the meteorological knowledge and chart reading that a fishing boat's captain would have
to have,
you know, and what kind of training, because I guess I never really considered the amount of training and awareness of weather patterns.
Especially back then with, again, very little communication to a ship, you really had to know your stuff.
Right.
So thumbs up, thumbs down. What do you give it, Becky?
Thumbs up, 100%.
Everybody gives it a thumbs up.
Thumbs up.
It left me crying at the end when they were holding hands on her mom and she was holding.
George Clooney gets you every time.
Gets me every time. Yeah, George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Just want to mention that weather in movies is something that we're going to continue to do as an ongoing series. So if you have a movie you'd like us to discuss the weather in this particular movie, then just send us an email at accuweather.podcast@accuweather.com. So now, before we get started, I want to ask you, what's the worst movie you've ever seen in your entire life, Becky? You'll see why I'm heading in this direction.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, the one we're going to discuss is pretty high up on that list.
Okay. What about you, Jesse?
I actually recently watched Hurricane Heist, which was a movie about the U.S. Treasury being robbed during a hurricane.
And that was pretty bad?
That was extremely bad. I paid 27 cents for it, and I want my money back.
So anyway, the reason I'm asking is because the worst movie I'd ever seen in my entire life, I think, was probably Roadhouse, up until I saw Sharknado. So now it's Sharknado, and I'm sure that number two will be any of the many sequels that come after Sharknado that we're going to talk about. So anyway, Jesse, how about you give me the synopsis on the storyline? What was the concept of Sharknado? What was the storyline?
The concept for the original movie was that unusual cyclone, I guess hurricane, affects Los Angeles and brings with it waterspouts that pick up sharks and rain them down on the masses, eating people on their way down. And after they land, they still got up and ate people. So.
Right. So they were like miles inland. So we had sharks pretty much all over Southern California. And the hero in this one was a former surfer or something, right?
Yeah, his name was Finn.
So give me your thoughts on the movie, Becky.
It was terrible. Like, the only scrap of semi-accurate information is that fish can actually be picked up by tornadoes and deposited elsewhere, but these are usually very small fish, not obviously entire sharks, and it's really rare for waterspouts to form off of the coast of California, southwestern California. It was pretty terrible. The storyline was awful. The plot was awful.
it got worse as it went on into the whole franchise, which the sixth movie is playing this month. But it just got more and more ridiculous. In the fourth movie, there was a nuke-nado when a waterspout hit a nuclear plant, lightning-nado, hail-nado, oil-nado when it hit an oil field.
Well, even the name itself is wrong, right? Because, okay, if it's forming over water, it's not a tornado.
Correct.
It would technically be a shark spout until it moved on shore, and then it would be a sharknado.
That doesn't have quite the same ring as Sharknado.
Sharknado sounds so much better.
It was a really terrible movie, and it only got a 3.3 on IMDb, but it's gotten a cult following, and it actually was recently labeled the most successful movie franchise of all time as far as sales. It's,
are you serious?
The original Sharknado movie was made for estimated $1 million budget, but they've actually sold $4.5 billion.
That's unbelievable to me.
Wow.
So it definitely has a cult following just because it's so ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous. Well, you know what it reminds me of? Were you ever fans of like Mystery Science Theater?
A little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you watch that? Because I used to watch that where it's one of those movies where you sit with your buddies and like you just bust on it the whole way through and insert your own quotes. And I'm like, so it's great for that. And we know that the weather was just a mechanism to provide sharks to eat people all across Southern California. So I know that technically they probably weren't too worried about how the weather broke down in it. But just for the sake of, I don't know, talking about weather in this movie, what about the idea of a hurricane of that magnitude in Southern California?
Of that magnitude, probably not very likely, but hurricanes do move up the coast of western Mexico and western and southwestern California. It's currently Hurricane John. Is it a hurricane now? It's veering away from the coast right now, I believe, but it is bringing heavy rain, rip currents, stuff like that to the coast. So it's not unprecedented. There can be tropical storms, even hurricanes, that move kind of that general direction. In terms of making landfall, it's fairly rare, but it's not unprecedented. I would say they're usually probably lower end hurricanes.
The problem is the water is very cold off the coast of California, so any tropical storm that moves over that water is going to quickly dissipate.
And the general flow of the ocean currents usually steers storms more out to sea.
Do we have a clip? Because this part was funny to me.
I like it, but how is that going to stop a tornado?
Tornadoes happen when cold and warm air meet. Now, if you drop a bomb head right in the middle of it, you just might equalize it.
So how realistic is his description there?
Throwing a bomb into a storm has been something that the public has long speculated about, but the physics of it in reality, it's not really very successful to do that. It wouldn't be. I mean, it's never really been tried except for in Sharknado and a few other films.
Geostorm.
Yeah.
Oh, did they do that in Geostorm? See, I didn't see Geostorm.
See, I actually really like Geostorm. We're getting off topic, but that can be.
Well, there we go. I mean, that's one of the next movies because I did not see Geostorm.
Yeah, that could be next time. Right. That was a really bad movie, I thought. So Becky and I disagree on that again.
Oh, it was terrible, but I loved it.
Yeah. This one was terrible, but I'll tell you, I had to quit watching. I really got through most of it. But whenever the scene came where he had a chainsaw and the shark came down on him and they thought Finn, our hero, had died when the shark landed on him. But then all of a sudden you hear the of the chainsaw and he comes slicing through and I was like, okay, I'm done. And I'm looking and I'm like, I think there's 10 minutes left, but I pretty much got the gist of this.
It, like all sci-fi movies, sci-fi referring to the network, it is a little, it has that cheesy horror aspect where it's a little gory, but it's still just ridiculous because the effects are bad.
Right, right. So no storyline. And like I said, I think they just used weather as a mechanism to be able to get all those sharks into Southern California. And I like the scene of Santa Monica Pier where they had the Ferris wheel kind of rolling through Southern California and like Hollywood Boulevard. You see like that
happens a lot in the Sharknado movies, the major...
It breaks loose more than once.
Well, not that, but, you know, there's additional scenes in the subsequent movies from Paris, London, Universal, Orlando, and those types of things happen again.
And is it always Finn? Is he always the hero in it?
He's always the hero.
Wow.
Oh, so everywhere he goes, don't go anywhere that Finn goes, because right. clearly everywhere that he goes, like there's going to be sharks. Like
we really thought we'd lost him at the end of Sharknado 5 last year.
But just quickly, how do we almost lose him in 5?
Well, at the very end, he was eaten by a shark, which was eaten by another shark, which was eaten by a larger shark, which was eaten by a whale.
Oh,
hold on. So Finn in a shark that's in a shark that's in a shark that's in a whale?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So we won't spoil it, because what viewers can stay tuned for is how he managed to get out of what, 1, 2, 3, 4 consecutive large sea beasts
and,
here.
Really good chainsaw.
Meanwhile, April, his ex-wife, is plummeting back down to Earth after being eaten by a shark in space. And
oh,
she,
a shark was in space.
And she gives birth on the way down to a kid.
Oh, my
so.
God. It only gets better. Becky, I thought this was as good as it gets.
Wow.
But it clearly gets so much better.
Who thinks of these things?
One of the reviews on Wikipedia I read said that obviously they're, you know, people just yell things out in a meeting, and then that goes into the script without any further review. So
you know what? It's got to be fun, though, to sit in that meeting.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't mind just kind of sitting in there and just throwing out some random, you know, ideas of what can happen to Finn in the next one.
And right after that, at the very end of Sharknado 5, time travel was added. So that's going to be part
of
Sharknado 6.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. Why not? So tell me what moviegoers can look forward to in the one that's coming out on the 19th of August.
Well, the mission of our hero in the last Sharknado apparently is to time travel back to a time before Sharknadoes and fix that problem so that the world doesn't get completely destroyed by sharks.
He is the most amazing surfer dude ever to figure this out. So, well, thanks for spending some time talking to me about this movie. And Becky, thank you for suffering through it. Jesse, he enjoys them, so he'd watch it anyway.
You know, you mentioned Mystery Science Theater 3000. I think the modern equivalent of that might be live tweeting, and this movie definitely lends itself to live tweeting. I've live tweeted the last couple of them, and we'll do the same for the one coming up on August 19th.
Can I point out one thing really quick? Jesse's yeah. Jesse's shirt has a shark on it.
Wow, that's I didn't even notice that.
I'm just gonna point that out.
That's perfect.
Just had to point that out. So this is great. So Jesse, if people want to live tweet and join you in this venture, what's your Twitter handle?
It's @acu_Jesse, J-E-S-S-E.
Is there going to be a hashtag that people can follow along?
It's usually hashtag Sharknado and the movie number, so hashtag Sharknado 6, I'm pretty sure is what it will be this time. And if you'd like more information on the Sharknado series of movies, I'm going to publish a blog today as well at weathermatrix.acuweather.com.
Oh, that's great.
Team Sharknado. We are not on it.
I'm not on Team Finn either. No. I don't care if they all just destroy each other. Well, thanks again to our guest, meteorologist Dave Dombeck, Becky DePodwin, and Jesse Farrell for sitting down to talk about movies this week.
Hey, before we get out of here, congratulations to you, Regina, and all of the AccuWeather Network now on DirecTV.
I know. Pretty exciting stuff now. We're at DirecTV, everyone that picks that up, plus yep. We're on the Verizon Fios network. So
Frontier channels. So, yeah, but if you have DirecTV, channel 361.
Right, and you know what? We're just taking over. We're taking over the globe.
That's
here
right.
At AccuWeather.
Hopefully, you don't get too big for us,
yeah.
And you still like to hang out with
Who's
Andy and I.
Yeah. I thought he was going to get my coffee.
Yeah. That's it, Andy.
Who's the guy that's supposed to get my coffee? Who gave him
the
mic?
He might be the new coffee guy. He might be. I don't know.
Well, thank you.
Now
Ken.
I know why I've never been invited on this show. I'm just a punching bag over here.
You are.
So yeah, obviously
you're the comic relief over there. So. But thanks, Ken. We're yep. all pretty excited about it at the network. And also, we have a pretty good show coming up next week.
Yeah, we're going to be taking a look into sports, certain events of sports.
I was hoping events. Regina would plug it because she's been talking about sporty balls. And,
sporty ball and yeah. shooty hoops.
Shooty hoops.
What was the other one, Andy?
Puck pass.
Puck pass, yeah.
But no, next week's going to be pretty cool. AccuWeather meteorologist and voice of Penn State football, Beaver yeah. Stadium, Dean DeVore is going to be joining us. Give us a little behind the scenes
of what goes into planning sporting events and how the weather impacts them.
Right, and football season's right around the corner, big excitement.
And I think Bernie Reno, once he heard we were talking about some football, he's going to want to
join us as
well.
I've got to get in on this. Yep. So
that was a pretty good little
That was an excellent Bernie impression.
Yeah. So be sure to tune in for that episode, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Be sure to subscribe to the AccuWeather podcast, giving you the stories behind the weather, discussions on trending weather topics, and so much more. New episodes every Thursday. Just search for AccuWeather on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorite shows.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.